cap.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
This certainly isn't one of my favorite times of the year for sports in general. It's a very rather slow time. So I try to find the roses that are in the thorns, right? I mean, this is a time where we kind of buzz about previews. College football's kicking into gear. It's media days week, whatnot. But one of the things that I do look forward to this time is the NFL camps are opening up, and that means very optimistic season previews. I love this time of year when people go, okay, I'm doing my previews. I'm doing my preseason power rankings. This team may struggle, but I think they're going to win 7 games. You know, if you look at the writers of these teams when they get together and they say, what do you think is the record for these teams? Boy, did you realize how quickly all the bad teams are going to be 8-8, 9-7, or 7-9? Right? The team that won 2 games last year is, you know, not as bad as you originally thought and have improved in their secondary. And that's going to automatically lead to like 6 more wins on the season. We know that doesn't happen. You go to any store or anything that sells magazines, you'll see all the preview magazines on the shelves, college football, NFL, with local covers. Here in Nashville, for example, you walk by the college football magazines, it's got Tennessee players on it. Tennessee Titans players are on the NFL ones. But the overall optimism is what gets me, right? Because that's what, and if it's one thing the NFL has done, it has always created a sense of optimism. And none has captured it more than the Cleveland Browns. The Cleveland Browns have been a doormat in the league for 20 years, and all of a sudden, now they're going to be a force. Now, it's easy to sort of go down, and Ron and I have done this many times, the idea of, you know what, they're going to be really good. Baker Mayfield has really showed that he belongs in this league. Odell Beckham gives him a new weapon. They are loaded with good players, right? Even Freddie Kitchens being a new head coach shouldn't be some sort of detriment to their success. But nevertheless, the reality of it is, we don't really know. And we're excited about these new additions, and we think in some sort of Madden rotisserie fantasy way that this team should come together and win games, but we don't know. But one thing is for certain, past failure doesn't equal future success, but past failure doesn't equal future failure either. There's no reason why the Browns can't be good, and I hope they are, for the division.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. You know, I think we all in our life have jobs that we would say, I would never do that job. And I'm not going to list them because some of you may do those jobs, and I don't want to, you know, say that I would never do what you do for a living. That would be insulting. Except there is one job that I think I feel like I could get away with saying without really feeling like I would be insulting anybody. I don't think I'd ever, ever, ever in a million years would be a Major League Baseball umpire. I think it's an impossible job. You're not supposed to be the news. You're not supposed to be the story. And, you know, there's some respect that you get, but most time you just get grief. And in the Yankee game, in the first game of doubleheader against the Rays, game one, Aaron Boone went ballistic on the home plate umpire, who, by the way, was a rookie and working just his 5th game behind the plate. Now, I can't imagine being a first-year anything, right, being in charge of something, and then having the people that are affected by what I do feel it necessary to yell and scream in my face and yell profanity at me. But that's what this young man, Brennan Miller, had to put up with yesterday from Aaron Boone. Now, why did Aaron Boone go crazy in the first game of a doubleheader in the middle of July? Because Miller was calling an absolutely horrid game. When you are a professional umpire, you are dealing with Major League Baseball players. Major League Baseball players that know the strike zone, They may disagree with where it is around the knees or around where it might be painting the corner a bit, but they definitely know when some balls are balls and some balls are strikes. And when you call it the other way, they're going to let you know. And the Yankees had enough. Heck, the Tampa Bay Rays had enough. He was calling it bad for both teams. And Aaron Boone decided, you know what? This would be a good time to let everybody know. Now, let me make this clear. I think Aaron Boone, who went absolutely ballistic on this umpire, did this for a couple of reasons. This isn't the first night in the first half of the season where the Yankees have had an umpire that has called bad balls and strikes. I'm sure it's happened many, many times. And many, many other times, Aaron Boone did not jump up from the dugout to go scream at the umpire. So why is he doing it now? Why did he do it yesterday? I think there's a couple of factors. I think one, he's been wanting to do this, and this would be a good time. You all know that most of the time these managers are just putting on a show. They're not really as angry as they look. I mean, my God, balls and strikes in a game, in a first game of a doubleheader, you have to be on the tipping edge of crazy to go as nuts as some of these guys go nuts. Like, if you're genuinely this heated up, the way Aaron Boone was, if that's really your personality, man, I really hate to see you when things really go bad. Like when serious stuff really hits. But most of it's show, and we know it. You know, you've heard stories of like Tommy Lasorda yelling at a guy and asking him while he's yelling at him, how is his wife and kids? You know, we know it's a show. We know a lot of times they're not as angry. They're doing it for other reasons. And I don't know what exactly the reason was that Aaron Boone went so crazy, and he went crazy. But I do know this. The Yankees now have a catchphrase for this season. Oh, great. Another catchphrase. Like idiots and all, you know, all the other ones that have come down the pipe. The Yankees now have another one. And this one is savages. When he was screaming at this young man, he used a lot of F-bombs. But one of the things he made very, very clear, he said, quote, my guys are bleeping savages in that bleeping box, right? And you have it, and you're having a piece of blank start to this game. And savages is now going to take off. The New York media is running with this. They're going to make T-shirts. There's going to be all sorts of references to this. He just created the marketing phrase for the New York Yankees, who now lead the AL East by 8 games and hit tons and tons of home runs. Now, I don't know if this was a calculated marketing move by Boone, but I think it was Boone going out there and establishing himself at the right time. And the right time was, here we are, doubleheader, afternoon game, and a young man behind the plate that I'm going to berate. Now, to Brennan Miller's credit, he tossed Aaron Boone out of this game. Now, I'll be honest with you. I would have been a petrified kid. I don't care how old I was. I don't care how long it took me to get to the majors. I don't care how much work I put into this. I would have been petrified. There is some level of authority that this kid must have been feeling when all of the ball players were looking at him. I mean, every one of them. I mean, even the Rays were like, what's this, man? What are you talking about? What do you mean that's a ball? What are you talking about? This is crazy. What do you mean that's a strike? This is nuts. What are you doing? Can you even see this? I mean, even the Rays were getting upset. But Brett Gardner lost his mind. Aaron Hicks was laughing at him because Brett Gardner was throwing a bat. And Boone said, all right, you know what? This will be a good time. It was really, really fun to watch, though. I mean, this is, you know, just a good old-fashioned breakdown of the umpire by Aaron Boone. But the Yankees are really good. I mean, the Yankees swept this doubleheader. They lead by 8 games now in the division. They're putting Tampa Bay to rest. Now, again, Tampa Bay is good enough. They could claw back into this. But the Yankees just don't lose enough. They just don't lose enough games. They're just not, they're not the kind of team that is built to sustain like a 9-game losing skid or an 8-game losing skid or something crazy like that that could put other teams in this race. You know, they'll lose, win 2, lose 1, win 5, lose 2, win 6. I mean, that's how strong they are. And it was just fun to watch Aaron Boone have this complete and utter meltdown. Because, again, it's all for show, but nevertheless. But the Yankees have been building this kind of team where offense, offense, offense. I still think pitching could snag them in the postseason, where it tends to snag teams like this, because you can't always count on the home run. And the Yankees have done this many times. Like when they get to the postseason, a lot of times because they're such a heavy hitting baseball team, they get to the postseason and you sort of count on that, and then it doesn't show up. And it didn't in the Astros series a couple of years ago when they made the postseason and lost to Houston. That there were games in which they felt the Yankees could have won, but again, they just didn't get enough runners on, and just the long ball wasn't there. They just could not get the big hit. And sometimes you can't get it, but if you can get some good solid pitching, that's when you start beating teams that are built like the Yankees. But this feels different to me. It feels like they've got enough where a couple of guys may not produce, but not everybody's not going to produce. Like that's how good they are from top to bottom. And it doesn't matter who's doing it, right? Gio Urshela is hitting well. I mean, they've got Gary Sanchez is hitting home runs. They picked up Edwin Encarnacion. He hasn't slowed down one bit. I mean, they're getting home runs from Luke Voit. DJ LeMahieu has been a fantastic addition for them. It's just a hard lineup to crack, and they are getting some really good pitching. James Paxton is having a pretty good year. Masahiro Tanaka is good. CC Sabathia is back, so tough. It's going to be tough to beat them, especially in a series. The bats really have to go quiet. But good call on Aaron Boone. So expect these Savage t-shirts to be hitting shelves anytime soon. And also expect Savage to be used in multiple ways by probably the Daily News and the New York Post in describing this baseball team. All right, coming up, we got to say happy 50th to the Apollo 11 mission to the moon. It's going to be on Saturday, the landing, the 50th anniversary of the landing. But we want to get into that a little bit because, man, that's pretty historic. It's something I wish I had seen as a young man growing up watching television. But I also want to get into Tiger Woods because he struggled on Thursday, talked about some physical nature. And what does that mean for his future? A little scary for Tiger Woods in terms of catching Jack Nicklaus. That's coming up next. It's SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. We're close, convenient, and known for our guaranteed everyday low prices and excellent customer service from professional parts people you can trust. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Hey, you know what I might be doing tonight? I haven't decided if I'm going to do it, but I have not done this in forever and a day. You ready for this? I might be going to a drive-in movie. I haven't gone to a drive-in movie in a long time. We want to take the Sea Kids Lion King, the new movie, and then Toy Story 4. My daughters really, really wants to see those, and there's like a double feature going on. But when I was a kid, I remember going to the drive-in with my parents, and all I remember is you would roll down the window, and you would take this big, bulky speaker, and you would put it on the window, and then you would roll it up, and you could barely hear the movie. And now they're saying, oh, no, you don't even have those anymore. You use your radio. It comes through your radio, which is great. But I also remember bugs. Like, we'd have this little tiny thing that you used to light with your car lighter, and it would try to keep the mosquitoes out. But, that crack in the window was just enough to get some mosquitoes in there. We'd get eaten up. But drive-ins are great.
I've never been to one. I always wanted to go to one.
Man, I don't think I've been to a drive-in movie in like 30 plus years.
I don't even know if they exist down here in Houston.
Really? I bet if you looked, you'd find one. It might be way out there somewhere, but yeah, there might be one.
Probably like a 45-minute drive.
I didn't know this existed or was a working one. It's near a golf course that I play, but it looked, when I would play it, you could see the drive-in from certain holes, and it looked like it was one of those old drive-ins that nobody just knew what to do with the land. But no, apparently it's a working drive-in, so my wife went to see one movie there a couple of weeks ago with the neighbors. She said it was really cool. So this is how she got the idea of, yeah, we should go. It's really fun. The kids had a really good time, blah, 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 blah. So I might do that tonight. But then again, you know what? I don't think you want me at the drive-in because I'm coughing up a storm. And do you really want me around in a car coughing like crazy where you're trying to hear the movie through your radio? So I'm looking forward to it. If we do go, I don't know, kind of those experiences. So tomorrow is the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. Neil Armstrong walking on the moon. It's 50th anniversary. Did I say 20th? I'm sorry, 50th. Stupid me. How dumb am I? 50 years from the moon landing. So I thought I'd do a little bit, because we don't have a show tomorrow, but I thought I'd do a little bit of just kind of retro here, feel, because I wasn't alive when this was going down. But every now and then, I look up at the moon and I think to myself, my God, we found a way to send human beings to that thing out there and land it and get them home. And it's still mind-boggling to me when I think about it. Now, a lot of it is because I'm not an engineer and I'm not good with calculus, okay? I can't figure out the algorithms on how they did that. But it is amazing to me that 50 years ago, without the supercomputers that we have today, without the amazing processing ability that we have today and the technological advances that we have, that they found a way to take three guys, put them on a rocket ship, send it out into space, guide that to the moon, land on the moon, and get back home. The getting back home part is really amazing to me. It's one thing to send somebody there on a kind of a death mission. Like, we're going to get somebody there, but they might not be able to get home. But they knew how to get them home. And I always thought it's just one of those things when you really think about it, it's mind-boggling. It's one of the reasons conspiracy theories have always sprung up about the moon landing, the fact that we faked it, is because it is somewhat implausible to a lot of people that we actually pulled this off. Right? Buzz Aldrin is still alive, and I read this not too long ago, a couple of days ago. I read that when the astronauts were all like, you know, sort of the sensors were all over their bodies to monitor everything, that when the rocket ship had launched and was actually hurtling into space, breaking the Earth's atmosphere, flying at whatever miles an hour that they were going, and that's tremendous G-forces, that Buzz Aldrin's heartbeat at that time was 88 beats per minute. Do you know how calm that is to be on a rocket ship? 88 beats per minute. That's cool. I'm good. We're good. I'm cool. I would probably be freaking out. You could put me in every simulator imaginable, and I would probably be freaking out.
Can you imagine the training for that?
I mean, it had to have been nuts. Absolutely. And that's probably why he had 88 beats per minute. One is because he's stone cold. And two, he's probably was like, oh, no, I've been training for this. And of course, it wasn't his first time on a rocket. They had gone up to do some different things. But this was different. I mean, it's not just the feeling of being on the rocket ship. It was where they were going, right? It's one thing to go into orbit and then come back down. Those guys had done that. But it's another thing to go to the moon, to say, we're going to spend the next couple of days going to the moon. And I trust and I know how we'll get back, but you never know what will happen when we go, right? What will happen? Will we run into some debris? Will something break? Will we be able to fix it? If it breaks, what does that mean? If we lose a thruster, what does that mean? Are we calculating for these, you know, doomsday scenarios so that we all get back home, you know, get back home in one piece? It is. It's really remarkable. It really is incredible. I mean, I got to think, and I got to think that those guys, Michael Collins, Neil Armstrong, and Buzz Aldrin, at some point thought, yeah, I'm not going home. I'm doing this for the greater good of mankind, but I might die up here. I'll probably die up here because you can't account for anything. You know, I mean, everything has to kind of go smooth. Now, again, I know they had contingency plans, right? I knew they, you know, if something broke, they weren't going to be like, look, if everything's got to go perfect and if one screw is loose, you're all dead. Like, I knew it wasn't like that. They were going to fix stuff. They were going to, the engineers were going to be able to guide them through some basic repairs or things like that, you know. But at the same time, that's a big deal. Like, nobody had gone there before. And they knew what it was. I mean, they knew what the moon, but they weren't 100% sure what the surface was like going to be like. They didn't know exactly. It was first time, and they did it and came back 50 years ago. Now, we haven't gone back since. A lot of it, people say, is because of cutting. Maybe it's because we're bored. I'd love for us to go back again. I'd love for us to go back. But I don't know why we'd go back. I mean, I don't know. Do we gain anything? Did we get everything we wanted in the number of missions that we sent up there? I mean, Alan Shepard went up there, hit a golf ball. And they got all the rocks they could, you know, they could get. But still, how awesome. In a time where the only exploration that was available for mankind really was going to space. You know, we could probably map out the Amazon or anything like that. But I mean, most of the real true exploring had been done. These guys were going where no person had ever gone before. And it was 50 years ago. It really is remarkable. I mean, I sometimes really pause and think how nervous that would have made me, even if I was well trained. It's funny. There's a ride at Disney World that I like. It's at Epcot Center. It's called Mission to Mars. And I only like it because they put you in this like centrifuge and they put you in this. They give you this video and it makes you feel like you're launching. And really what it is they've created some G-forces to give you that feeling of being, you know, sucked down by the G-forces. It's pretty cool. It's a pretty neat experience, but it certainly isn't close to actually launching in a rocket. But even that ride makes you feel like, oh my God, this is incredible. Have you ever been on a ride like one of those, it's kind of like those drop rides that they have where they take you up and drop you, but instead of dropping you, it goes up at a high, fast rate. You know, a lot of the drop rides will take you up slowly, hang you there for a bit, and then, but there are some when you get in the seat, it shoots you up as fast as possible. I love those, but those get, you know, make me nervous.
I got on that Mars one that you're talking about.
Yeah.
There's like two versions of it, like regular and extreme.
Yeah, they did.
And I did the mistake of getting the extreme one. I felt so claustrophobic. The G-force they give you, I'm like, oh my God, what did I get myself into?
It's a wild ride. They put you in a seat and there's four to a cabin. And you get like, oh, you're an engineer, you're the pilot, you're the navigator, right? They give you those assignments. But basically it's because the unit is you're basically in a spinning centrifuge, right? I mean, that's basically what it is. So you sit in there and then they close it up and then they tilt you. They put the shoulder bars come down and then they tilt you so that the only thing that is in front of you is the screen, the video screen where the ride is going to take place. And you really can't see much. I mean, you can turn your head, but you're really tight in there. And then when that puppy starts spinning, when you're launching and it goes lift off and you see the screen, like you start feeling in your stomach, like you're being sucked down into your seat, right? And then when you get released into space, they change it so that you're almost floating out of your seat. Like there is a flotation feeling of weightlessness. They do a really good job of it, but it's really just spinning you around at a crazy rate. So you feel G-forces. But imagine, listen, if I was on that rocket ship, I don't care how well trained I was. You could put me in the astronaut training camp for 10 years, right? If I'm going to the moon and no one's ever gone to the moon before, and I'm on that rocket ship and it's launching, my heart rate is 500. Are you kidding? My heart rate is at a very, very dangerous level. All right. It ain't going to be no 88 beats per minute like Buzz Aldrin. Buzz Aldrin's a monster. You know, I get the feeling Buzz Aldrin, even at his age, that if you put him on a rocket ship and send him to the moon, his heart rate would still be 88. Like he's not, you know, he's probably less because he'd probably like, I lived a great life. If I don't care what goes wrong, I'm just enjoying this. I'll just have a good time. But hey, man, at 50 years, that's incredible. And it's going to be tomorrow on the moonwalk. I know I've said this before, but because we're kind of talking about this, there is a movie, First Man, that was out last year. It's about Neil Armstrong's life. Not a bad movie if you want to kind of see the inner workings of how they went to the moon and what they did to go to the moon, all the training that it took to learn how to dock and, you know, land the pod and, you know, all of those things. It is mostly about the life of Neil Armstrong, the personal life of Neil, what kind of father he was, what kind of husband he was, some of the personal stuff, the tragedy that went on in his life. If you're into that stuff, it's a good movie. If you just want to know about Apollo 11, I think there's a movie called Apollo 11 that's probably better than that. But First Man is not a bad look into how those guys actually got to the moon, landed on the moon, and did what they did 50 years ago. And the landing is 50 years ago tomorrow. All right, coming up, we'll roll along this morning. There's a lawsuit in the NFL from last year's championship game in the NFC. What is it trying to do? Why is it doing it? We'll talk about that next. It's SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, it's the biggest fight of the summer. Manny Pacman Pacquiao and against Keith One-Time Thurman. It's for the Super WBA Welterweight Championship. It's live from Las Vegas at the MGM Grand, and you can catch it this Saturday on pay-per-view. Order now on the Fox Sports app, one of the greatest fighters of our generation, putting his legacy on the line in a can't-miss fight of the summer. Manny Pacquiao against Keith One-Time Thurman, the World Welterweight Championship. It's this Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Again, live on pay-per-view. Order it now on the Fox Sports app. All right, this story is, sometimes I have to just roll my eyes, but I roll my eyes anyway. A Louisiana judge is allowing a lawsuit against the NFL seeking damages over the errant pass interference non-call in the NFC Championship game last year. Get a load of this. So there's a lawsuit where they went for the minimum amount of money they could, but what they really want isn't money. What they really want is accountability. They want to know how the NFL managed this after the game. The case is only seeking $75,000 in damages. That is below a threshold that would risk the case being moved to federal court. Now, they say that the funds awarded would be donated to charity. What they're seeking is information from the league about how the incident was handled and if officials were disciplined. All right, listen. I hate being the one to tell you guys this in Louisiana, but you got to let this go. I am as sympathetic to your cause as you're going to find. I was outraged by this. I was as angry about this, and it wasn't even my team. I don't even root for the Saints, but I was rooting for the Saints in that game, and I was rooting for Drew Brees, and I wanted Brees to go to another Super Bowl, and I wanted the city to feel another Super Bowl, and this was as egregious of a penalty as you could ever have. There was it felt conspiratorial at the time. It was so bad, and I don't believe in conspiracies. I don't believe games are rigged. When Nickel Robey Coleman just absolutely annihilated Tommy Lee Lewis, I completely understand where some of you are coming from. And it hurts and it stings. And you do want answers. Sometimes, again, there's this old adage that the scale of justice oftentimes is so badly out of balance that you want a balance in some way, shape, or form. And I understand that this feels like this is highway robbery. The league took this away from you because they didn't act on it. There was nothing really that they could do, but you want some change and you want some answers. And they're trying to do that by letting you review pass interference calls now. But nevertheless, at the time, it doesn't change the fact that the Rams went to the Super Bowl when they like most likely would not have had that call had been made. The Saints had to kick a 31-yard field goal instead of getting a fresh set of downs at the 6-yard line with less than 2 minutes to play. Who knows how that game would have played out, but in all scenarios, it would look like a Saints victory. You don't know if there would have been a turnover, maybe a blocked field goal, maybe the Rams get the ball back with enough time and score a touchdown. All of those things are into play. But this looks really, really dumb. This lawsuit looks really stupid. And I know one person's lawsuit or, you know, small group of people don't speak for all the Saints fans and all the people in Louisiana that are outraged by this, but this does look petty. It really does. Now, what are you going to get? Now, the person who filed this lawsuit says, I want their personnel files. I want their gradings. I want their notes from the game. Why? Why do you want it? What would you do with it if you had it? Do you think there was some cover-up? What do you think happened here other than some really, really bad calls? A really, really bad call. Now, listen, I can't and I won't say, oh, this happens in every game. Because it doesn't happen in every game. A call like that doesn't happen in every game. And a call like that doesn't happen with the game on the line like that. I mean, you have a perfect storm of, again, what I said earlier, a conspiratorial nature to this. A perfect storm of, here it was late in the game of who's going to go to the Super Bowl, right? The Saints are in a perfect position in the final minutes of the game to take a lead in the game and go out there and win this and go to the Super Bowl. And instead, this call changes things. So the Saints kick a field goal. The Rams come down. They tie the game, and it forces overtime. The Saints could have scored a touchdown. The clock could have been too much for the Rams to overcome. Who knows what would have played out? But because that call wasn't made, this game was decided in a different way. And that doesn't happen in every single game. So I'm not going to insult your intelligence by telling you, get over it, this happens all the time. It doesn't happen all the time. But, and I'm not sticking up for the league here, this is what sports brings us. That every now and then, something like this happens, and we have to either deal with it as fans, or we have to take the whole institution and throw it under the bus. I've said this many times to my conspiratorial friends who want to so badly to believe that their team was robbed on purpose, right? You hear this all the time, right? They don't want us to win. They want that team to win because they want ratings. They would never let us win because we're not a big market, or they don't want us to win because of this. There is a belief by some fan bases that this goes on a regular basis. But I always tell people, when you play this out, what do you get out of it? When you really play it out, okay, let's go down the rabbit hole that you're trying to tell me in terms of the league is rigging games. Okay, why are they rigging games? All right, so how do they do it? Do they sit in a room on a Monday and they say, hey, guys, here's what we've come up with. We need these teams to win. Is everybody on the same page? Do they get with officials? Do they tell the officials in advance, now make sure you call the game in this, and if it gets too much where you feel like the game needs to go in a certain turn, make sure you find opportunities to make calls, even if they're so egregious, that go against the, you know, that go against the team, so we can ensure a victory for Team X. Okay, now let's say they do that, and now they've got all of these officials all on the same page, and now there's a full office of people who are manipulating all of this too. All right, now what happens when an official leaves the league and wants to write a tell-all book? What do they do? Do they have him locked up in an insane asylum through some local authority? Do they take him out? I mean, play it out here, okay? So if they're rigging games, if they're determining that your team isn't worthy to play for a championship, or they just don't want you because they don't like you, so how do they do it? Are there memos? Are there paper trails? If so, how do we get a hold of them? Is that what this is about? I know it sounds crazy, but this is sports. What are you going to do with this information? Well, they didn't discipline the officials. Well, to be honest with you, and I really mean this, to be honest with you, how do you discipline the officials? Do you fire them for this? Okay, if you fire them, what does that mean? I said this at the Super Bowl, and I tried to get people to understand this. They wanted Roger Goodell really badly to say, this was a travesty. This was an absolute travesty to the game. We need to look into it. We don't like it. We have to fix it. This is not going to be the way we're going to do business going forward. They wanted Roger Goodell on the eve of the Super Bowl to do that. And I kept saying over and over again, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. He's not going to put a stain on his great game. He is not going to put an asterisk next to the Super Bowl. He was never going to do that. And the reason he was never going to do that is because the Super Bowl is the biggest sporting event we have in this country, if not the planet. And yet, you wanted Roger Goodell to say that one of the participants was illegitimate because you didn't like a bad, bad call. I can go to every single fan base in America, and they will tell me some egregious call that they've had in their lifetime, and I bet none of them come even close to this in terms of costing your team a championship. Now, some might, you might, a baseball game or an NBA game or even an NFL game or a college football game. But this was as bad as it got, and it still wasn't going to get the answer that you wanted from Roger Goodell, because he wasn't ever going to stain the credibility of his Super Bowl. And yet you wanted it all week. Saints fans wanted it all so badly. I told you when I was down at the Super Bowl week, I went to the Roger Goodell press conference. He had all sorts of questions about other things around the league, but man, majority of them wanted this. What did you think of this? What are you going to do about this? What does this mean? And Goodell didn't fall for it. He's too smart for that. Now, I don't know if this lawsuit goes through it, if they win, I don't know. But what they want is, and here's the interesting thing. This judge, Nicole Shepard, she also ruled that the attorneys in this case can request documents from the NFL and also question league officials, including Roger Goodell. Roger Goodell could have to go to court in Louisiana to answer for this. And I will tell you something. As much as I think this lawsuit is nuts, that is probably the shining light on this that I actually might look forward to seeing. I hope they televise it. Would they televise this? If Roger Goodell was in Louisiana answering for this? I think it would be pretty cool. So, all right, that's one shining thing that comes out of this. But in all seriousness, this just doesn't make you look good. It just makes you look petty. We all move on in sports. We all do. It hurts, but we all do it. You know, it's the worst. I mean, you say, I have a friend of mine who's a Cowboys fan. And he told me, he goes, I don't watch the Super Bowl. And I said, you don't watch the Super Bowl, but you're a huge NFL fan. He goes, no, I'm a Cowboys fan. And I don't watch the Super Bowl unless the Cowboys are in it. And I'm like, well, okay, that was like, you know, 20-something years ago, but all right. You haven't seen any of the Super Bowls since? No, he said. Now, I don't know if I believe him, but He kept saying this over and over again, that he doesn't watch it because the Cowboys are his team and the Cowboys aren't in it. That's a tough way to go. You know, it's a tough way to go. We all tend to get over things in sports. And I know this hurt, but boy, this lawsuit is kind of silly. All right, 800-777-2907 on Twitter at Tony D Radio. You can hit me up there. It's SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I mentioned that I might be going to the drive-in movie tonight, and Robert on Twitter sends me, Michigan was once the home to the world's largest drive-in movie theater. And so I just clicked on the article, and sure enough, there's this huge drive-in movie theater. I'm looking forward to it. I'm not nervous. I mean, that's not the right word, but I'm curious to see how the night's going to go. Will I actually enjoy this experience? My wife was like, you know, we're not going to get home till like 1 o'clock in the morning, and we're not spring chickens by any means. 1 o'clock in the morning is late, especially when you get up early to do this job. But I don't know. I'm kind of looking forward to it. But I always remember when I was a kid, there would always be like a movie. You get a movie in the early one that was kind of family friendly. And then the last one would be, you know, it could be rated R, or it could be whatever. I usually was fast asleep as a kid, but we're going to see Toy Story and The Lion King. Could that be too much Disney for one night? Like, would I just be like, oh God, give me something else.
Never too much Disney.
Yeah. Give me It, or, you know, or give me some Stephen King horror mixed in with this, but you know, it's going to be good old family fun. Well, you know, good old family movie. So I heard the Lion King is pretty good.
No spoilers, please.
Oh, yeah, no spoilers is right. Toy Story 4, it's like, how many Toy Stories are we doing here? That's from the early 90s, isn't it? Like 93, 94?
Yeah, it is.
It's been around for eternity. How many of these Toy Stories are you going to do?
Hope is the last one.
Well, yeah, the great thing about toys is they don't die. They just get moved from owner to owner to owner. So, yeah, it's probably the last one. But it should be good. These live-action remakes look pretty sweet. So I'm looking forward to that. Lion King's a pretty good story. So I did. I haven't seen Aladdin, but I heard Will Smith knocked it out of the park playing Genie. I heard he did.
Oh,
really,
he did.
Really
yeah, it was good.
He?
Yeah, it was good.
He did a good job. That's hard to do because Robin Williams was great with the cartoon, as the voice of the cartoon. And Will Smith did a great job as Genie.
He reminded me of when he was in The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yeah, you know, isn't it amazing how some actors, they just have that longevity that, you know, they just keep turning out good stuff over. Like Tom Cruise. You know, you can pick on Tom Cruise for some of the things he's done, maybe wacky beliefs and whatnot, and people have taken their shots at him. But Tom Cruise has been famous, like, pretty much my entire knowledgeable life. Of movies. Like when I was old enough to know movies and go to movies and figure out which ones I wanted to see on my own, Tom Cruise has been around pretty much my whole life, from Risky Business in the early 80s to all these Mission Impossible movies and all the ones that he's been doing. I mean, he's got some longevity. And Will Smith is like that, too. When I was in high school, Will Smith was, you know, was DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince. You know, parents just don't understand, and all those kind of lighthearted rap songs that he would sing, right? Then he was in Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and it was, you started seeing his acting chops, and you started realizing this was a really multi-talented guy. He could sing, he could produce a record, but he also was a pretty good actor. I mean, he was a really good actor. And then also he gets into the movies, he becomes a movie star, and he stayed being a movie star. And he's made some bad movies. I mean, 7 Pounds is a terrible movie. That's atrocious. And some other movies haven't been very good, but it doesn't matter because he's likable enough that you want to see him in these films. Whenever I'm watching, like if I'm flipping through the channels and nothing's on, I can't figure out what I want to watch. If Men in Black come on, I watch it every time it's on. The first one with Tommy Lee Jones, I watch it every time. I'll be like, yeah, Men in Black, why not? Just throw that on. He's funny. He's good. He's just a super talented guy. And that's not that, you know, some actors, they've got a window of being really good. And then it's like an athlete. They got a window of time. They're good. They make money. They make good movies. And then they kind of disappear and you kind of forget about them. And they just might show up in some other things. Maybe they do some little low budget movies as they fade away. But the real ones, man, they got some good staying power. Will Smith's got some staying power. So. All right, 800-777-2907 on Twitter at Tony D Radio. We'll give you a British Open update coming up. And what is up with Tiger, if anything? He is struggling in the last few majors. I don't know if we thought we'd see that after his Masters win. SB Nation AM.